Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. It's another Champions League Wednesday. What's up, brother?
What's up? What a start.
No words.
I couldn't get the words out.
Damn these words.
What's that? My head is melted.
Why? What's wrong?
It just seems all this football is being compacted together and forced into my skull.
What is this, your first day?
I don't know. I
mean, you've been doing this for years now.
How was Nashville?
Oh, boy. Amazing city. Like, couldn't recommend the city more as a place to go. The game, I was just walking out of the stadium awaiting your text.
No, I wasn't
How's
going...
your Eagles road trip? Now,
no.
It was because it's one of the worst Eagles losses I've ever been to, probably in person, in terms of the way the game transpired.
Okay.
And then sure enough, I'm walking out of the stadium, and my phone does buzz.
Ah.
And sure enough, it is you.
But
it wasn't, because for a second when I saw your name, I thought to myself, he wouldn't do it again.
No, I wouldn't do it again.
But instead it said, so when we recording this day and that day, I was like, he thinks I care right now.
See, people, this
so
is the,
again,
the curtain has been lifted into what Andrew Gunling thinks of the general public. Well,
no, your team loses a
it's
football
hard to
game
care,
in pretty crushing fashion. I know it's only the fourth game of the season, but as far as a football game goes that you're invested in, it's hard to lose in more devastating fashion than that.
I'm pretty sure then that when I was in Kiev straight after the Champions League final, you did text me and say, so how are we going to record?
Well, we were doing a post game. We were doing a podcast right after that game.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying.
Seems like a normal question to ask.
Anyway, in the spirit of friends...
But I actually do have a question, though, for you.
Oh, go on.
Because this has been a great subject of debate since I returned from Nashville. Five of us went.
Okay.
We had one hotel room.
Yeah.
A suite. So three beds for five people, which
okay.
meant you had to share.
Two, two, and one.
Yeah. I, for the life of me, don't see any problem with that, and I was stunned to return back to work and basically find everyone that I know and work with just like... relentlessly making fun of me for that.
That's not weird. What's weird about that?
Thank you.
Bunch of guys.
Right.
Strange.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm like, am I crazy? Like, is this really that? Like, am I too old for this? Because I'm 34, and they're saying that when you turn 25, that's it. Separate rooms or at least separate beds.
For God.
I said, first of all, we're not all rolling in cash like, you know, Scrooge McDuck.
Right. And you want to spend it on a few beers and have dinner and do stuff
right,
like that.
You prioritize. You don't spend much time in the room. When we are in the room, you know, you get back at the end of the night, you've been drinking, like you don't really care. So, you know, we're willing to kind of skimp on that so we can spend on other stuff. Like, I don't get it, man. I couldn't believe the backlash to doing that.
And what kind of life clock do these people have? Do they wake up one morning, it's my birthday, 29, you know what that means? 1 year till 30, and also right now I can never, ever share a room with men or friends again.
Everyone has an opinion on everything. People just can't let people live.
I think you were just fine. But in the spirit of going with your friends to sporting events... What are you doing this weekend?
Wow, that's a question.
Saturday night.
I'm intrigued.
UFC 229, McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Where's that?
It's on TV. I was thinking.
Oh, I thought you meant let's go. I was
no.
Say, what are we flying? What is it, in Vegas or something?
I know some Irish people who would drop, you know, thousands on going to see McGregor. I'm not one of them. But we go to a bar in Brooklyn. We get dinner beforehand and we go watch the fight.
I'm gonna have to clear this one. I'm gonna because you know I was gone all last weekend.
All right,
and so Amanda, you know, we may be doing something Saturday night.
So in other words,
I was gone for 3 days, and like I feel like I'll kind of I don't know I'm not I don't know if I'm ready to commit.
If you don't do this, in the words of Conor McGregor, you'll end up.
How many barbecues did I invite you to over the summer that you just like brushed aside as though they were nothing? Don't put our friendship all on this event. Now suddenly because you're inviting me, it matters more.
That's not what I said.
That's how I read it.
You'll end up doing nothing like Conor McGregor
I'm
said.
I'm not a UFC guy. Like that's if you said, let's go out to watch like
it's just
know, this college football game or this NFL or this soccer, I'd be like, oh, but like that UFC doesn't necessarily excite me.
Essentially, I'm asking you to hang out. The centerpiece or the event around which we are arranging it just happens to be Khabib and Conor.
I actually like boxing more than UFC. I'm like kind of holding on to that relic.
I'm not a big UFC guy either, but McGregor is interesting. And also, if you don't, Andrew, and I'm teeing you up again for a wonderful McGregor drop, if you don't come out with me this weekend, you'll end up...
Shut your f***ing mouth, you'll do nothing.
Yeah, I'll do nothing.
You'll end up doing nothing.
Yeah. I'm going to watch The Man in the High Castle because that comes back at the end of this week.
Excited about
that. It's been too long and I'm ready. I'm ready for it to resume.
You know what else we're ready for?
I'm also ready to talk soccer. Champions League. Let's start. We'll go through this chronologically as we tend to do because it seems to make sense. Or we could do alphabetical, but that's more confusing. We'll start with Tuesday. Juventus 3, Young Boys 0. A lot of these, we're going to tell you the scores of all these games, but we'll stop along the way when we have more to say. I don't have a ton to say about this other than, I guess, props to Dybala, who comes up with a hat trick in a match that you would fully expect Juventus to win. They've been in scorching hot form for pretty much the entire season. And
Young
Boys going to Turin, I wouldn't have really expected it any other way.
No, exactly. Two tap-ins and one wonderfully executed first goal, which was a brilliant volley with the inside of his foot. Look, it's begun already. Oh, just goes to show you, they should have started them more regularly in the World Cup. He should have done X or Y, blah, 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 and proclaiming him as the new whatever. I'm a Dybala skeptic. I really think he's fabulously talented, but, I mean, a hat-trick against Young Boys is... It's not enough.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, it's like all the Phil Foden truthers after he was phenomenal against Oxford. You know, like, he might be a great player, but let's, like, not use this as the gauge necessarily.
Foden truthers.
Let's see. Speaking of which, Hoffenheim and Manchester City. City win at 2-1 in Germany. I do have things to say about this one. Mainly, it must have felt good for Leroy Sané to return to Germany, not necessarily the club that he came from,
right,
but be playing in front of the German people and play so well after. It's still fresh, I'm sure, in everybody's mind in Germany with what happened at the World Cup this summer with him not being on the squad. Could he have helped? You know, there's people on both sides of that argument. We'll never know. But watching him play that well in front of German fans, I'm sure there were some people leaving that place that day saying to themselves, could have used that guy.
Definitely. The larger thing for me was at halftime, you could imagine how Pep was acting and the intensity brought to those conversations, because Hoffenheim were defending pretty well. Baumann was having a good game in goal. And if that was just 1 point after two Champions League games, Andrew, you would say that is a slight mini crisis for a Manchester City team, which is supposed to be built to win this tournament. Now, David Silva had something to say about that.
He certainly did.
What a goal that was.
Yeah, man of the match performance from him. I thought it could have been Sané, but when Silva scored that goal, I think he shifted it in
absolutely
his,
and he made something out of nothing. He nipped in front of the defender. It was a poor kind of attempt at controlling the ball, but Silva had so much to do. Within a shot, it's in the net. He's not bad.
No, he really is quite good, actually. And you're right. I don't know necessarily if I would say that they are staving off crisis had this not gone
the
way that it did. And I know you didn't say that either. But it's important. It's, you know, in the Champions League, you're expected when you're Manchester City to go to Hoffenheim and be able to win. Like, that's, if you think that you have, you know, the ambition to go on and win this whole tournament, then you should be able to get 3 points there. You're going to have to win on the road at some point, most likely. Now, speaking of Pep, he did talk about all this and, you know, their difficulty in the first game against Lyon, their difficulty even in this game. And here's what he said. He says, I'm not surprised. How many games did you see Shakhtar or Hoffenheim before today? They're good teams. The teams are so strong, so good. I knew it. I tried to tell them against Lyon how difficult it would be. We don't have history behind us. For me, it's a surprise when they say City will win. I appreciate it. Thank you. But it's not true. We're the same level of the teams, a step below the history of a Liverpool, the Spanish teams, Milan, Juventus. That's what I believe. We've had one semifinal, one quarterfinal. It's step by step. Be humble. Analyze the opponents. We'll try to get to the quarterfinals. That's a huge success for City. What? I'm sorry.
Well,
I don't buy it. Well, I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to, again, he's like Mr. Mind Games, and it's more.
Guys, Sellers Park. We must always be going playing hard. But guys, we cannot, for 1 second, we'll drop any intensity. You're tired? F*** you.
But for him
but that is classic him. What he's saying about Hoffenheim there is that you're not watching Nagelsmann like I am. You're not understanding what he's doing with this team. And to a point, he is correct. But the other side to that is you spend so much money on this team.
You just won the Premier League, arguably the best league in the world, by a record margin.
And Hoffenheim haven't torn up any trees in the early stages of the Bundesliga.
And for me, it's not even necessarily about what he says with regards to Hoffenheim, Lyon, or Shakhtar. It's really that last line that, like, really grabs me when he says, we'll try to get to the quarterfinals. That's a huge success for City. I'll be curious to see what the Manchester City supporters believe in a statement like that.
What would Khaldun Al-Mubarak think of any of this? That's not where he expects you to be.
This is not what we're paying for, Pep.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that it's championship or bust for them in the Champions
League. But they were building for this before Pep arrived.
Right.
Tichy Begiristan was in, how many, was he 18 months or 2 years in the job, building this background, this new club, so they could be competitive regularly in the Champions League. That's, I know what Pep is saying from the point of guys, Selhurst Park, and guys, Hoffenheim. But at the same time, you can't be serious when you're just talking about we're a step below X or Y. That does not wash.
No, not for them. They're just way too good. I'm sorry, that ship has sailed. The expectation is what it is, regardless of what you want to say publicly.
You can't bring back the first season feel of this.
Right, that ship has sailed. Now, there is one other part of that, though, that I'm a little bit torn on. And that was what he said in the middle about, you know, we don't have history behind us like a Liverpool, a Juventus.
Well, no.
But it's funny because part of me wants to say, does that really matter? The players matter. But last season, after Spurs went out to Juve, all I heard from, you know, Chiellini and players like that was, we're Juventus, we always believed we would do it, they don't have the experience here. You know, and then when Liverpool went on their run, Liverpool finished fourth in the league last year. They were a very good team, but they weren't outstanding. But in the Champions League, they seemed to be carried through with this belief that we're Liverpool, we can beat anyone in Europe.
Right.
So, you know, I'm conflicted, quite frankly, as to whether or not history, you know, the color of your jersey actually does play a role.
I think the role that it plays is probably in the hearts and minds of the traveling supporters and the fans. Because when Liverpool travel en masse, it's because they've been traveling en masse for years. And you have this red wave behind you. And it does matter. It is a 12th man. Whereas we often see at Manchester City, we see empty seats in the stands for games that would be packed anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And that's probably part of it. But I kind of do concur with you about the whole history thing. If you've got a functioning team, like what was Borussia Dortmund's history when they went in 1997 and won the Champions League against the history of the old lady of Turin? Like,
well, there's obviously an exception to every rule.
Well, I'm not saying they're an exception or anything. Or Valencia when they went to a final. You know, all I'm saying is if you have a functioning team, a team that works on the field, I think that is obviously the ultimate criteria on which you're judged. It's football matches, but maybe the 12th man has a difference. I don't know. That one from, I kind of know what Chiellini was saying. I think Chiellini could have been talking about my personal history when he was delivering those comments last season, because he has been there, done that. And so you don't panic when you're in certain situations. Maybe it's a personal history. Or maybe it's the history of walking through the walls of the tunnel of Turin and you see all those great names on the wall and you think, oh, well, they did it. Why should I worry?
I can't wait for them to get to like the quarterfinals and go out to like FC Porto. And we have to say, well, hey, we made it. This was a success.
There's your example. I'm not saying Porto have no history whatsoever.
The Porto-Monaco year?
But I'm just talking about Porto under Mourinho.
Yeah.
I doubt Mourinho was talking about history.
Right, when they went to Old Trafford.
Yeah, and when they won the UEFA Cup against Celtic. Who had the bigger history? Celtic by far. And what did they do? They beat them.
Let's see. We continue now. Benfica winning in Athens 3-2. Roma 5-0, getting that goal differential up against Victoria Pilsen.
Yeah, it should be noted, Edin Dzeko loves playing against Victoria Pilsen. That's his second hat-trick against them. He had won in the Europa League a few years back. And Justin Kluivert scoring his first Champions League goal and dedicating it to his Ajax teammate.
I'll have something more on that.
I will say nothing then.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice thing that you were about to say. I feel bad like silencing you, but
no.
I will have more on that.
I would prefer. I'm in generous mood this week.
Thanks to a Twitter follower of ours who I will identify later on, who identified a story for us.
You identifying the common man, giving him props?
Look,
from your ivory castle?
Look, I'm as common as it gets, all right? I'm shoving five guys into an airport hotel on a vacation, so that's common man.
I want you to temper how you deliver that comment from now on, okay?
Let's see. Bayern Munich 1, Ajax 1. What is happening exactly in Munich right now with this club? Because if you look at where they're at, a draw. Now, we do hold them to what might be an unfair standard, and they've set that standard by how they've performed over the last several seasons. But look at their last three matches, a draw versus Augsburg, which
right.
is not something you would expect, then a 2-0 loss to Hertha Berlin, and now a home draw in the Champions League against Ajax.
having only seen highlights of this, I find it hard to be able to put my finger on it. But if you look at the team in terms of the spine, Kimmich, Boateng, Hummels, Alcantara, Robin, Muller, Lewandowski. I mean, you can't say, well, that's their B team. That was an experimental team. They even had Frank Ribery in the side. So from that point of view, I'm almost going to take the out card and credit what is an extremely talented young Ajax side that grasped a draw. Like, they went behind. Usually what happens when you go behind like that in Munich is you get hammered. But they set about their task, Andrew, and in Dusan Tadic, they had someone who, I can't believe I'm saying this, I actually thought Dusan Tadic was making the wrong move when he left the Premier League. I'm very wrong, obviously. He played in a ball for Mazurai, the fullback. That was just wonderful for the goal. Ajax played really well. There was this gif I saw of Ziyech as well, receiving the ball on the right-hand side and pinging a 40-yard pass across the field straight onto the foot of his teammate. Ajax were very, very good. And maybe this Munich team, maybe I'll go back on what I said there. Maybe the experience, they're a bit leggy. They're a little bit older. Maybe this team hasn't been updated in the way that Kovac needed to.
They are second right now in the Bundesliga, which is a sentence I don't think I've said in a really long time.
Borussia Dortmund is ahead by one point, of course.
Only six games in there.
But there's a lot of miles in Robin, Muller and Ribery if you just look at that front line there. Maybe that's got something to do with it. Like, yeah. I haven't seen enough of them this season to make it a definitive comment on them, but that's a young, nippy, confident Ajax team. Maybe that had more to do with it than anything.
Could be. CSKA Moscow and Real Madrid. And Madrid lose at the Luzhniki, which is now like...
Fortress Luzhniki.
When I heard them say it, it was like, aw. It brought back such fond memories from this summer in the World Cup. But yeah. The Luzhniki a year ago at this time would have meant nothing to me. But Real Madrid, that's now three games without a goal for Real Madrid, which is... also a sentence I don't think I've said in a really long time. Now, in fairness to them, it's not like they didn't get close. Mariano, Benzema, Casemiro all hit the post in this one. Modric and Varane missed really easy chances. So, I saw Julen Lopetegui afterwards said...
Allow me to do it.
Okay.
In Champions League voice. In the Champions League, 10 days ago, we played a magnificent game against Roma. Neither were we so great then, nor are we so bad now. Football has these moments. It is not easy, but we must accept it and move on.
I'm okay with that.
Which is okay, but this is three defeats in the first 10, which is the worst start of a manager in over the two Florentino Perez reigns as the head man at Real Madrid. And Dermot Corrigan posted a piece from Marca by Jesus Sanchez that was full of, you have to click translate. So it didn't come out perfect, nice. But a lot of it's pretty good stuff that suggests the team has been weakened every summer over the last few years. One of the lines, my favourite lines was, a battleship with blank cannons is how he described Real Madrid without Ronaldo. And also, this is the gamble, he lays out the gambles Real Madrid have taken every season over the last few years. Bale will not get injured, Benzema will score more goals, Asensio will emerge as a crack striker, Marcelo does not need a substitute. Ramos and Varane do not need rest. The years do not go through Modric and Kroos, and they can always play. So he's saying that maybe this is all coming together to take its toll. The lack of reinvestment and reinvigoration in the squad.
I get what he's saying. That certainly makes sense. However, think of like the names that you just rattled off there. Hmm. And then think of the line, it's like a battleship without, what was it?
A battleship cannons. With blank cannons.
That's insulting. The name, okay, Ronaldo's no longer there, but the names you just read off, Bale, Modric, Kroos, Asensio, Marcelo, Carvajal, like Ramos, they're still so good.
See, I agree with you. The talent is still there, but...
They might be tired. It's certainly possible.
Maybe the miles have got up a little bit, but I mean, that you can't apply that to Asensio. You can't really apply that to Bale. Bale should be fresh.
Well, Bale is, unfortunately for him, The big concern was, okay, when Ronaldo leaves, this is now Bale's time. He's going to step in. He's going to be called upon to take on a much larger role for them. I think we all knew that was the case. The only question, because I believe he has the talent, the only question was whether or not he could stay healthy. And already we're seeing that even in a year where he did not go to the World Cup, a lot of these other guys did, he's having a hard time with that. Couldn't go in this one. He missed out due to injury. Ramos missed out due to injury. Carvajal left with an injury. Modric, who was actually brought on as a sub because they were, I guess, trying to be careful with him. So you're right. There is a lot of mileage on these guys because, you know, this entire team essentially is coming off of a World Cup summer. So, look, there's going to be growing pains. I think we had to know that that was going to be the case with Ronaldo. What we see from Real Madrid right now through two Champions League matches and seven La Liga matches is not the finished article. You know, Ronaldo was a huge part of what they did. He's the face of the team for a decade. So, you know, I'm not ready to judge them just yet.
It's too early, the jury's out, but, you know, there's alarming things happening. This result, 3-0 down away at Sevilla at halftime, of that is good.
Three straight games without a goal is odd. There's enough there that you wouldn't expect to see something like that. However, having said all that, they are tied atop the league right now with Barcelona, who are having many of the same issues. We'll get to Barcelona after our break. Before that, though, Lyon and Shakhtar, that ends 2-2. And then there's Manchester United. 0-0 against Valencia.
The response you want after a 3-1 defeat to West Ham away. That is, I'll tell you, he's won me over.
They were booed by their home support. Home support for Manchester United, by the way, another thing that I will get to later on in the program. Amazingly, United have not won at home in all competitions since the opening day of the season. That was against, was it Leicester?
2-1 against Leicester.
Right.
And they weren't even good that day.
It's the first time in Mourinho's career that he's gone four consecutive matches without a win, four consecutive home matches without a win in all competitions. However, he seemed to be pleased with the effort afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Effort is... He made the point that some players don't care as much as others in the kind of aftermath spillover into the press conference. So what happened at the weekend against West Ham, he played five at the back, Scott McTominay being one of those in the centre, and they got beaten 3-1. And they went 1-0 down after 5 minutes. And that kind of spilled over, that bad feeling spilled over into this game, into the press conference. And he said... He believed that some players care more than others. So Rob Dawson, Mark Ogden, our ESPN guy said, well, we expect him to pack a team full of people who care. But I don't want a team, if I'm a United fan now, I'm basically accepting that they care at the base level that's required for a professional footballer. What I need to see is that they can play and that they can put together something that's not just entertaining, but actually scores goals and gets results. And they failed again in that. Andrew, Valencia, remember I talked about Philadelphia Union being football and constipation? That was Valencia as well. Valencia had Guedes on the ball, Batshuayi. They couldn't create anything.
The final third.
They were dreadful.
Yeah.
And they were there for the taking. And again, you saw this limp, clueless United who had Sanchez back in the side, who had, you know, Romelu Lukaku, Rashford. There should have been enough there to put... I expected to see after the weekend, I don't know why I expected it, but I expected to see Valencia bombing down the wing, Luke Shaw bombing down the wing, a real barnstorming response. That's what I defined as caring. I didn't see any of that.
I mean, JJ, it's Valencia, which, okay, that's a name that carries a certain level of cachet. They have one win in the league. They're 14th right now in La Liga. This is not some powerhouse that came into Old Trafford, and United just... I don't know. They just, again, look... They're feeble.
Stodgy, turgid, just bleh.
I don't know what's going on there. It just seems dysfunctional. You mentioned Romelu Lukaku, who seems to have hit kind of a rough patch. And you know, there's some people who are starting to call for Marcus Rashford to maybe be starting in
centrally.
Lukaku's place centrally for United.
I don't know about that. Lukaku, Rashford himself, His set pieces, his corners were dreadful. He did.
He came closer to scoring than anyone else. He had the crossbar.
He curled that one onto the top of the crossbar. I know, but it's thin gruel over 90 minutes, Andrew.
Well, but I mean, that's as close as they got. And Lukaku, he's just not giving them anything. People keep talking to me about, you know, Harry Kane is tired from this World Cup. When are we going to start talking about that for Romelu Lukaku? Harry Kane is scoring goals right now week after week. He seems to be actually bounced from whatever that rough patch of form was. He seems to be okay. Lukaku right now looks like the more fatigued, great English or great striker playing in England.
Yeah,
right,
and
now.
I would say as well, there's not exactly a supply of balls whizzing into the box for him to attack. There's no linked up, joined up midfield play where you could say, oh, they're really playing to the strengths of Lukaku. That's not happening. Look at Alexis Sanchez. I would have thought the perfect foil for Lukaku was in Alexis Sanchez just playing to the right or the left of him or getting in around him, that he'd create loads of chances for Lukaku. But that's not happening either. This is a team that is not functioning at all.
It's been disappointing, no question about that. I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick, very quick break here, so don't go anywhere, and then we've got more Wednesday Champions League matches coming up on the other side.
Here comes Jordi Alba at pace. And Messi, this time it's inside the post. It's been a great game. And Messi can wrap it up here. Wonderful chance. He doesn't fail them.
Back now on Caught Offside.
Yeah, that first O was just a bit too excited.
Yeah.
You text me something. Can we begin here?
Yeah, sure.
And I think what you text me was really, really good. And it summed up the kind of guy that you are. And it's a good thing. I wish I was a neutral watching this game, because the only people on earth who are miserable watching it right now are Spurs fans. It's been up and down, wide open chances, almost all for Barca, but still, you could appreciate the magnificence of what you saw tonight.
Especially in the first half. And you heard Martin Tyler say it there in the call. He says, it's been a great game. Yeah. Neutral fans probably loved watching that game, because Barcelona in the first half were out of this world good. Spurs were lucky to be only two down, I thought. I mean, Barcelona scored 2 minutes into the game. Philip Coutinho, Kieran Trippier caught out. Nice ball played into Jordi Alba, who I thought was excellent on the night, wreaking havoc. Trippier was having a hard time with him throughout the course of that game. Alba, you know, Hugo Lloris is back now, and he's a great keeper. I've really enjoyed him, but I don't know, man. I've gone back and watched the clip of the first goal.
I've no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, I just don't think you come rushing out for that.
There's no need.
Do
you think that's a little bit of... he's been out, injured. He's also been out with a kind of a cloud over him over what happened with the drink driving charges. And he just wants to, here I am, I'm back, I'm going to do this, I'm a good guy. Just wants to show the fans something. And in his eagerness, he's done something that he had no need to do.
Yeah, and look, I don't want to make it sound like he was insane to do it. I'm just saying I question it, because whether he stays in goal or not, Barcelona are going to be presented with a scoring opportunity.
But
I'd rather my goalie be in net to deal with it, because if he was, he saves it. Now, look, I'll say this. Coutinho's finish was sensational.
Actually,
there's no keeper, but like where he placed it, it just nicked off the inside of the post.
It's the underrated finish of the night, because he's got to get through some bodies to score that one.
Right.
And he drills it perfectly.
Yeah. And then, look, after that, Rakitic's goal, I'll tip my hat. Again, though, it was, you know, Coutinho... with a chance, kind of scuffs it, somehow keeps it in. It's a tremendous job by Philippe Coutinho. He keeps that ball in,
plays it back
into space, into a dangerous area where there's no way he can see Rakitic moving into that spot, but he knows, he's smart, and he knows, let me just at least put this ball back into the center of the area. And Rakitic just puts the full force of his foot through it. It's an incredible finish, again,
standing
off the inside of the post.
Standing foot off the ground as well when he strikes it. You know, they always tell you, get your body over it, get your head over it, so you keep it down, but you get the requisite power, his shape, everything. Andrew, that gave me those feelings.
Yeah.
Those volley feelings.
I'm sure many neutrals felt that way.
I'm sorry, man. I saw it, because you text me and you said, in fairness to you, you're not as bitter as me about these things. You text me straight away and you said, oh, expletive, Rakitic.
That was bitter.
That was no, it wasn't F him. It was F... oh my God, exaltation. Like you say, in a moment of pleasure. And it was a moment
it was hardly a moment of pleasure.
I got great pleasure from it.
Well, I'm happy.
Not because of
happy.
You, but it gave me the feelings, the football feelings.
And then, look, Lionel Messi was, it was just classic Champions League, big stage, Wembley, Messi just owning the night. He was sensational. The fact that he only scored two goals is kind of a minor travesty in all this, because he was good enough to probably have had five or six. Hit the post twice.
Well, he scored enough against English teams.
But the interesting thing was, so he hits the post now for a second time, and it's one of those, okay, sigh of relief, we're still in it. And then Spurs come right back down. Eric Lamela, who, once again, JJ, I thought was fantastic in this game for Tottenham, plays in Harry Kane. Kane still had a lot to do, and Kane's finish was brilliant.
I know, Kane did that perfectly. That was really, really great play by him. And it was a worthy goal on the night, because, you know, he's a player that in the big moment steps up, particularly in the Champions League for Spurs, and that should be noted. He deserved his goal there. He used the defender perfectly, bent it in the bottom corner. But like you said to me in the text, it was... the preponderance of chances were going Barcelona's way, and you're just hoping you get a bit of luck and maybe nick another one.
Right. You know, some of the luck that went against Spurs, against Inter, like maybe some of that will come back our way in this one.
No.
But it doesn't, because they've got Messi, who then right after the Kane goal, he goes down. Jordi Alba again, down the left side, plays in a ball. I don't even know if it was meant for Messi. Luis Suarez with a brilliant dummy, gets to Messi eventually, and he finishes. Was it scuffed or not? I couldn't even tell. But he finishes, and it's right like that. It's 3-1. Credit to Spurs, though, because from that moment on, they dominated that game. Pushing hard, you know, to obviously equalize or even go ahead. Lamela gets a goal off a deflection, and they continued to push on. They had chances. You know, Lucas Moura was going to score, if not for a brilliant deflection to put it out of play for a corner kick. But I thought Moura had the equalizing goal. And then, JJ, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go off on a rant or anything like that, because I'm not, you know, that's not typically what I do. But, like, I've kind of I can't see Moussa Sissoko play for Spurs anymore. I can't, and I know that's among Tottenham fans, it's so cliche. You know, it's like a married man having an affair on his wife with a secretary. Like, it's just an annoying cliche. Like, ugh, you're like, but that's Sissoko. Like, it's a cliche among Spurs fans. But just watching him tonight, his giveaway, Tottenham probably weren't going to go on and score at the end to tie that game. But like, he scuffs a shot. The ball was put into him at one point, and he just like skies it to the moon. It was terrible. And then at the end of the game, obviously it's his giveaway that leads to Messi's second to ice it. It's just like, there has to be, like, is there anybody in like the youth setup right now that can be brought in? There has to be a better option. Now, they took Son off for him, and Son is still working his way back into form. But here's the problem, and here is where the conversation with Tottenham always circles back to the lack of activity in the transfer window. They have to go to Sissoko, because look what they're dealing with against Barcelona on the night. No Eriksen, no Dele Alli, no Jan Vertonghen, no Moussa Dembele. They're dealing with injuries right now. They're hurting. They have no choice.
What does it say about Kieran Dyer and Eric Dyer. What does it say about Eric Dyer in the setup of Spurs right now when you go into battle against Barcelona, missing all those players you've mentioned, and in the two, you've got Harry Winks and Victor Wanyama? I mean, Wanyama's hardly played this season. And Harry Winks is Harry Winks, still, you would think, in his formative years as a young professional. Certainly, that just seems like a mismatch.
I mean,
Busquets, Rakitic. It seemed crazy.
There are two players that I like. Wanyama was probably lucky to still be on the field at the end of that one. He's a force. That's one way of putting it. But, you know, he's a risk for two yellows pretty much every game he steps out there. But I like him. And I like Winks, too. But you're right. It's a tall order for two guys that don't have a ton of playing time right now, and now you're being asked to play against Barcelona midweek. Look, credit to Barcelona. They were excellent. The fact that it was 4-2 is almost a favor to Spurs, because it certainly could have been worse.
Well, I think Spurs fans can look back on that game with some level of fondness.
I'm glad you said this, because I wanted to tell you that I think in the moral victory table, I mean, Spurs are 10-time champs. Like, we're going for the record here in the moral victory table. I'm so tired of that. I'm just like, you're right. Tottenham, once again, we're exiting a big Tottenham match saying, well, you know, we're patting them on the head. Well, you look, you guys, at least you guys played well. Good job, son. Here, here, have a cookie. You know, that's Spurs. And it's every time you think we're past that now, they can't clear that hurdle. They're doing great in the moral victory table, but that, like, they can't get past that. Against Juventus last year, you did come back in Turin, against Chelsea in the FA Cup semifinal. Well, that you lost 4-2, but that was one of the thrilling games of the year. Thank you, Tottenham, for treating us.
You're naming out the most vicious Spurs meme that goes around, where the trophy cabinet has nothing in it except pieces of paper that say, almost beat Juventus,
yeah,
should have beaten Chelsea, and this one will be added to it. Scored two against Barcelona.
Now, look, it's not all true, because they took 4 points off Real Madrid last year in the Champions League. But because of the way it ended against Juve, you kind of wind up looking past that.
There's frustration there. I felt that frustration because I felt you should definitely have gone through against Juve last season. That was just golden opportunity blown.
Yeah, they do that. They do that pretty well. They've left themselves in a tough position, obviously. Going to have to beat PSV in both. Going to have to beat Inter Milan in the return leg.
I think they can do that. I would not put that beyond Spurs. A big night at Wembley or
I think so.
MK Dons or wherever, wherever they end up playing it. I could see them doing that.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of the pitch, how about that?
What was going on with it?
Over the weekend there was an Anthony Joshua boxing bout.
Oh, that's where that fight... Joshua fought at Wembley.
Yeah.
And that's why... That was discolored.
Like perfectly square, right? You could tell exactly how the ring was situated. Like, yeah, that's what that was.
I was hoping it'd be something much more embarrassing for Spurs fans, like a Shania Twain concert,
right? Or yeah, like a Paw Patrol,
a dog festival.
Let's see, PSV Eindhoven and Inter 2-1. It goes to Inter. They come from behind once again. Icardi getting the winner. PSV, though, to their credit, a little bit unlucky. Samir Handanovic probably should have been sent off for a red card for handling the ball outside of the box.
Instead, he was
given just a yellow. PSV also hit the post. And then ultimately, Inter got their winner when Icardi scored into an empty net when PSV's keeper and defender kind of collided into one another. So it was a difficult night. Fans were angry there. I think some objects were rained down on the field after the non-red card, and then Inter scoring shortly after that to equalize. But it is Inter now and Barca at the top of that group with 6 points each, way ahead with Tottenham and PSV sitting on zero. Lokomotiv Moscow losing to Schalke. And this, JJ, this was very much your...
You like me!
...game of the season.
Sponsored by Sally Field.
In by Conor Plianka. McKennie's header! And what a time to score your first ever club goal!
88th minute, the young American, the 20-year-old, fresh-faced American kid, scores a header to win a Champions League match for Schalke. Oh.
That feels good.
Yeah.
That feels particularly good. What am I saying? What am I saying all the time? Your best players playing in the best leagues at the highest level doing their thing. It energizes you, and now you see him sat there in that midfield role for the U.S. doing the same.
Right. Like, he's not just being like a wallflower. Like, he's not just blending into the action. No, no, no. He's scoring winners in the 88th minute of Champions League matches.
It feels good. It's very, very good. Look, you're not piling on the praise. He hasn't just come off the bench and done that, by the way. He's a consistent starter in this team, and the people at Schalke rate him so highly, which is also a good you-like-me moment.
Oh, my God. This is all just like...
You like me!
Overload,
exactly. And his role in the team, particularly for this US men's national team, which we will talk about on our second pod of this week, that's an important role. And the fact that he has a goal in his locker too is even more important.
Yeah, certainly is. From a position, for a guy who that's not necessarily what he's going to be called upon in some of the ways that Pulisic is.
Yeah.
But yeah, Weston McKennie, it's all coming together. This is, I don't mean to be making light of this or anything and jumping way ahead, but this is the kind of progress that you want to be seeing. Like, he's not coming off the bench. He's a guy that Schalke is asking to play an important role for them in important games. Like you said, this is exactly the direction and the trajectory that you hope that these young players would remain on.
And we will have more to say about that U.S. men's national team for the upcoming friendlies on that second pod.
Yep. We continue PSG romping over Red Star Belgrade. Belgrade 6-1.
4-0 at halftime.
Yeah. Neymar with a hat trick in this one. But it all feels hollow because we see PSG doing this against opposition that we deem to be subpar, but then losing at Anfield against Liverpool. So we're just not, you know, we know their history last year. Okay, PSG, you know, they're doing good. They did beat Bayern in the group stage last year, but then they get their chance against Real Madrid and they go out. Like, so it's just, they are the example right now of, you know, like when it's money time, can we trust them? And unfortunately, you don't know until you're in it. Like, these results are all fine and good, but we just don't know what they mean.
Bleacher Report did the highlight package of what Neymar did, and oh, wasn't Neymar brilliant? And that's what the guy can do. And really, the only thing he did for me, he took his second goal very well in stride, and the free kick was very, very good. But a lot of it was just, you know, he'd feint and he'd dribble around a guy, X or Y.
Well, he is still Neymar.
But
that's
he is Neymar.
Does.
But if you break down just the general play of Red Star, you're like, you absolutely expect this. This is not an indicator of anything.
No, you're right. But
the
second goal,
Andrew, they had 4 occasions to clear the ball. They were so bad. It was incredible. And I couldn't understand it, because this is the team that ground out a 0-0 against Napoli, who I think as a team, not an individual group of players, as a team, are better than PSG. So I don't know what changed in their game plan.
I hear you, but you know, it feels not totally fair to me, because if it was Messi or Ronaldo that registered a hat-trick, regardless of who the opposition was, we'd be saying, you know, here we go, Champions League. This is when these guys come to shine.
You're just following the Steve Nash line. He played against the cards that were dealt. But I'm telling you, these cards are feeble cards.
Well, the one thing I'll say about PSG is they've scored 3 or more goals in every single match this season except the Liverpool match. So they are, you know, and some of those are against, you know, we say what we want about French opposition. Not every team playing in Ligue 1 is a joke.
No, they're not.
Right. So
I understand that. And this is, but this is Mbappe. This is Cavani. This is Neymar. This is Rabiot. This is Meunier.
Di Maria scored today.
Look, it's a collection of players that, even if they aren't functioning in their fullest sense or playing to a game plan that we can all agree with, should be able to take apart teams like Red Star.
And they certainly did. 6-1. Let's see. Oh, JJ, Borussia Dortmund. We're in action. They won 3-0, and it leads us into this.
It's time for Boy Wonder Watch. Christian Pulisic! Oh, that boy really is special!
That's right, JJ. Young Man Wonder Watch. Now, Christian Pulisic did not play in this game today.
No, he did not. He has a calf problem.
Yeah, Borussia Dortmund termed it as torn calf fibers.
Which is so vague, because we don't, me and you, we're muscle experts. We need to know, is it grade 1? Is it grade 2? What kind of tear are we dealing with here, Dortmund? Doctors.
I don't like it. I mean,
no.
Because I'm starting, you know, he's starting to miss more and more action. He missed a couple of Bundesliga matches earlier. I think that he was going to be able to play in this one.
And they have attempted in the past with him before to have rest periods. He did that one. He had one rest period at the end of last season where he was just pretty much left on the bench or out of the squad. So this is concerning.
He's young, and now you're starting to see a small resume of injuries beginning to appear. And, you know, it's concerning for a couple reasons. One, I want him to be healthy. Like, I want him playing. That's the obvious one. I don't want him to become a guy who, like, some people I really believe are just genetically predisposed to suffering muscular injuries.
I believe that too.
So, you know, I really hope that he's not one of those guys. And it's very early to be saying that, but it's something to keep an eye on. And two, for all the reasons that we were praising Weston McKennie a moment ago, you know, he's getting opportunities. He's playing. Well, Borussia Dortmund look like they're a pretty good team this season. They're doing well in the Champions League, and they're first right now in the Bundesliga. They've got some good players. Like, there is part of me that worries, okay, we know how good this guy is, and he's obviously going to continue to play, but, like, there is always that possibility at a high-profile club of having some other guy move in and take your spot. And now all of a sudden his opportunities are becoming less and less. You just everything's been so good, so good, so good. You don't want to see progress stunted in any way.
And I think of the pass he made for one of the goals against, I think, Nuremberg, was it? It's just, he dribbles past 3 players, and without looking, he plays this perfect ball in. Now it's expertly finished. And you just see, wow, we don't have a single player with that kind of talent. We don't have a single other player we could even begin to think about plugging in if this guy is injured. And that's where the real fear comes in.
Yeah. But Borussia Dortmund do defeat Monaco 3-0. I don't have anything on the game. I just only have Pulisic-related matters.
Information.
Yeah. Atletico Madrid defeating Club Rouge 3-1.
Griezmann show.
Yeah. Atletico not known this season for scoring goals, but they do put three in that one. They did have a 0-0 at the Bernabeu against Real Madrid. Which I guess they would have viewed as a positive result. FC Porto won, Galatasaray 0, and then JJ, last but not least, Napoli 1, Liverpool 0, thanks to Lorenzo Insigne.
Here's Callahan. Callahan, Insigne! Napoli have nicked it!
It looked like we were headed towards a 0-0.
Which I would have taken at that juncture quite happily. Just look at the stats, Andrew. Shots. 14 shots for Napoli, 1 goal, 5 on target. Liverpool shots, 4 shots, 0 on target. This was a night where once Naby Keita went off, and he went off early, so I don't want to talk about that Liverpool were playing stunning football up until that. They weren't.
Well, he also nearly created a goal for Napoli on his own when he misplayed a back pass.
Right, but generally speaking, Keita was going to give you that kind of drive in the midfield that suddenly when you take him out and put Henderson in, you're not going to have. So you have Henderson and Milner in there and Wijnaldum. And there was no link between the midfield and the attack. But I have to give credit to Ancelotti in particular. He clearly watched the game against Chelsea at the weekend, which was probably the game of the season in the Premier League in terms of just pure quality football. He targeted the fullbacks, Andrew. Now, remember you made an awkward analogy just minutes ago about the boss who's cheating on his wife with the secretary.
It's a cliche.
It's a cliche, but it's an analogy nonetheless. Are you ready for this analogy?
Go for it.
Ancelotti played 4-4-2, so that gave Ruiz and Callahan all this space to bomb up and bomb down. And he kind of played with out-and-out wingers. If Ancelotti was... You've seen the film Mean Girls, right?
No, actually.
You haven't seen Mean Girls?
No, but keep going.
Well, Ancelotti is Lindsay Lohan, who's moved in from South Africa or wherever she's come from, and she's trying to integrate into the school, and she sees the hot girl, the popular girl table, and she's none of that. So Lindsay Lohan is Ancelotti, right? With his 4-4-2. When do you hear anyone talk about 4-4-2 anymore?
It's very out of fashion.
So he goes over, Lindsay Lohan does, and Lindsay Lohan tries to sit with, you know, Guardiola and Klopp and Nagelsmann. Tries to sit with the cool group. And they're like, you are not sitting with us because look at you with those 4-4-2 dungarees. That is so 1987.
Right, you think you can sit here with our back three and are playing it out of the back?
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. You play with wingers and two midfielders in a flat four? Oh my God, it's gross. So basically, the Mean Girls, I can't believe I've just compared Ancelotti to Lindsay Lohan.
I think you nailed it.
And now I see Lindsay Lohan with a permanently raised eyebrow and now I'm scared. But the point being is, he looked at the way Liverpool played and he went out. He also didn't start Dries Mertens. You know, that would be a player I'd immediately start. He got his tactics perfectly right, and the wide players caused Liverpool trouble all night, and it was no shock that it came from a wide player, a wide position, that cross into Insigne, and he was the one player I feared, because I think he's brilliant. If I could add anyone from the Italian league to the roster of Liverpool, it would be him. I think he's outstanding, Lorenzo Insigne. So here we are. Liverpool weren't at it. Sloppy passing, a midfield that wasn't working, and a front three that really didn't get on the ball. I mean, the stats speak for themselves. When's the last time Liverpool only had 4 shots in a game?
Yeah, you're right.
The worst performance under Klopp, well, not under Klopp forever, obviously not, but the worst performance of recent memory. And here's the problem. There is no time for reflection. Manchester City on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you said last week, when we talked about Liverpool, you said this is a difficult stretch here with the Chelsea midweek and then Chelsea at the weekend and then this one and then City. This is a gauntlet.
That's why getting out of Dodge tonight with a point would have been fabulous, and we don't have that now. But I'm wondering, can that steal the resolve, focus the minds for the weekend? Because it's a huge game now.
Well, almost more worrying than the result, because ultimately I do think in this competition, Liverpool will be okay when push comes to shove. I think when you looked at your group, you saw at Napoli, yeah, there's a chance that we don't get out of there with the full 3 points or even 1 point. But the Naby Keita injury coming up, I can only assume now with him having to come off in the 16th minute of an important Champions League match that he's not going to be ready to go at the weekend against Manchester City. And that feels like a potential problem.
Yes, it does. And it kind of limits what Klopp wants to do with this side as well. I should just say that Callejon was denied by Alisson. Dries Mertens hits the bar after a brilliant Mario Rui cross, which was actually a great save off Mertens from Alisson. Alisson had a huge game tonight, Andrew. His value was massive. That could have been much worse. It could have been two or three.
Yeah. So there you go. That's our look at the Champions League, which of course will return later this month. We've got red cards and man of the match coming up in just a sec. But JJ, Indochino, I want to talk to you about Indochino. Tremendous clothing company. They make tremendous clothes. A very easy online personal experience. You just go to their website, you put in your measurements, and it all happens for you. And the interesting thing about Indochino is I think people associate them with a certain type of clothing, but they are expanding into casual clothing made with made-to-measure chinos.
I love a good chino.
Who doesn't? And they are your place to go. Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Here's how it works. You visit a stylist at one of their showrooms, or you have them take your measurements personally, or you can measure yourself at home and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric, both inside and out. Choose your design customizations, submit your measurements with your choices, and then just relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed right to you in a couple weeks. It could not be any easier. This week, listeners to this podcast can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Offside at checkout. OFFSIDE. That's a 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free for a suit. That's Indochino.com, promo code OFFSIDE for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino, like I said, also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater. And they'll be good for any time of year, for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. It's Indochino's at an introductory price of $79. So check it out. Great stuff. And like I said, promo code OFFSIDE. Very cool. Let's see. We bring it down the stretch now. Let's start with...
Red card.
Let's see. I'm going to go quickly here, if you will allow it. Manchester United is my red card. A little bit of a different angle. I don't want to pile on because that's kind of what like a lot of these podcasts I feel like are becoming. But to me, this was a sign of where things have gotten to with United. Champions League nights were an event at Old Trafford. And maybe in the most poignant sign yet of where morale has fallen to, there's this. Leading up to the Valencia game, loads of tickets remained unsold, prompting United to send this message to some of their members. This was a text message sent to people's phones. Come to OT, Old Trafford, for tonight's Champions League game versus Valencia. Visit manunited.com/UCL or walk up and buy tickets from the ticket office. Did you think you'd see the day when day of Manchester United are begging fans of theirs to show up for a Champions League match? By the way, you know, not a match against like a small Russian club or something.
Victoria Pledson.
No, but we're talking about Spanish opposition, like a team that people have heard. I know they're struggling in La Liga, but still.
And this is a club that cherishes the European Cup.
Yeah, it's not an under 23 match or you know, a preseason friendly or something. This is a Champions League game against Valencia.
God, that's sad.
Yeah, capacity at Old Trafford is 75,000. They did wind up with 73,500. Not a sellout, which, again, Champions League at Old Trafford, I think, is disappointing. But the fact that that text message is being sent by the club to fans day of the match, the fans are. They're growing tired of what they're seeing right now. I can't necessarily say that I blame them. This is not like me ripping on fans for being bad fans. I get there's frustration there, and for whatever reason, whether it's the manager, whether it's players, they just don't really seem to feel a connection to this team right now, and they're starting to show it.
I wonder, did Mark Goldbridge go to the game?
God, we've got to get him on this podcast.
We have to get him on the podcast. We really do. My red card. Well, Steve Bruce, Andrew, sacked by Aston Villa this morning, and it was a pretty undignified end to his tenure. So Villa blow a 2-0 lead last night against Preston. Then they miss a last-minute penalty to win and ended up drawing 3-3 at home to Preston. The game was, it was crazy. It really was. It was a debacle. Prior to the game, though, Aston Villa manager, well, actually, let's just play Glenn Whelan's, his penalty that, I mean, it could have been a 4-3 win for Villa, but this happened.
And Glenn Whelan has got the chance to win it in stoppage time. And he can't! Maxwell saves! And there's the final whistle. It was the last kick of the match. An unforgettable match at Villa Park.
Now, I'm sure Bruce thought the writing was on the wall there. That is, that was one that they should have won and they didn't. So I'm sure he thought he was going to get, as the old song says, sacked in the morning. But this was even before the game. Steve Bruce was hit with a cabbage. Some fan brought a cabbage to Villa Park and threw it at Steve Bruce. So now, Andrew, if you'll allow me, I would like to place this cabbage in the context of vegetables in the English game. Play the sad music. Graham Taylor gets a turnip superimposed on his head by the tabloids as his England side falter and fail to qualify for World Cup 1994. Sven-Göran Eriksson endures Sweden sour puns as his England draw 2-2 with his native Sweden at World Cup 2006. If you didn't know, the Swede is a root vegetable and a member of the turnip family that originated as a cross between the cabbage and the turnip. And now it comes full circle, Andrew. Finally, 2018, a man brings a cabbage to Villa Park, throws it at Steve Bruce in protest at 1 win in 9 games. West Midlands police are trying to identify the assailant.
The assailant. That's emotional. That is sad.
That's vegetables in English football, brought to you by Caught Offside.
Caught Offside's man of the match.
My man of the match, JJ, you kind of referenced this a little bit earlier, but I'll start with this. Props to Dustin Gray, who sent this story to us on Twitter, and it's one that we missed from back in late August, but I've only seen it now, and I was once told it's better to be late than never. The story he sent us was sort of a follow-up on the tragedy surrounding Ajax's young phenom, Appy Nouri.
Which we covered originally.
Yeah, you may remember that in a friendly against Werder Bremen back in July of 2017, he collapsed with what was later diagnosed as a cardiac arrhythmia. He survived but suffered serious and permanent brain damage. Eventually, he was able to start breathing on his own, and then this past August, he came out of what had been a year-long coma. His brother said that he can recognize people and communicate in a very small way. It's an awful story, and there really is not a happy ending to this, but I did want to at least give a shout-out to Nouri's former teammates, Justin Kluivert, who you mentioned for Roma, Amin Yunus of Napoli, now Kevin Dix of Fiorentina, and now Philippe Sandler of Manchester City, all at some point or another former teammates of Nouri's, and they've all decided to honor Nouri by switching their jersey numbers to his number 34, which I thought was a small but certainly nice gesture for what is a really, really sad situation. So we obviously root for his continuing recovery, and I'll root for these guys because I think that's a nice thing that they're doing for a friend of theirs that is really going through an incredibly difficult time.
Thanks, Dustin Gray, for that. I appreciate him flagging that one up. My man of the match, and I saw this on the BBC, and again, this is something that really touched me. This is a kind of sad end to the podcast, but I think this maybe might have a joyous end in a way. Maybe I'm being wrong about this. A 94-year-old man who has dementia was invited to fulfill a lifelong dream by scoring a penalty in front of Notts County's home fans. A spokesperson for the club said Roy Prentice from Chilwell was a massive county supporter who wanted to score a goal in front of Meadow Lane's Cop End before he died. The event took place at halftime on Saturday during the Magpies' home fixture against Crewe Alexandra. Alice Kelk, fan engagement executive, said it was a beautiful moment. His family were watching and were very emotional. Now, I can direct people to the Notts County Twitter feed, which has the video up. It's every bit as beautiful as you might think it would be. And dementia is, it robs someone of their everything. Of they're locked in their own heads. They're scared. And I found a family member of mine had dementia and he's since passed away. But when we would talk about the Buffalo Bills, we used to watch the Buffalo Bills, and that would bring him out of himself. He could talk about the Buffalo Bills. He could talk about all the games he remembered. He was a Canisius basketball fan as well. He would remember all those little pieces, and it kind of enlivened him and it brought great joy to him, because some days he would look at his sock and he wouldn't know what that was for or where should it go. So yeah. This was just a really sweet moment. And at 94, to have dementia, it seems like a cruel way to finish your life. But Notts County, that is how you step up. That is a wonderful thing to do.
That's really nice. Good stuff, man. Good stuff all around. That is our show for today. Like we mentioned, we do have another podcast that will be coming out probably sometime Thursday afternoon, early afternoon. So keep your eyes open to both the Caught Offside feed and the ESPN FC feed as well. Some U.S. men's national team talk as the roster has been announced. Mailbag, we got a big what to watch for, because it's a big EPL weekend and MLS weekend as well. Well, this was fun.
It was fun. Before you go, I'm going to hold you to this. What are we doing for UFC 229?
I'll have to get back to you. That's the best I can offer right now. I'm sorry.
Beer, burger.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be a great time.
A Russian and an Irishman beating the heck out of each other.
So you're still a Conor guy, huh?
I'm not. You've
kind of gone in waves with him. Like, you loved him, you hated him. I don't know where you're at.
The whole publicity for the Mayweather fight last year really turned me off. I didn't like it.
And then that whole thing at the Barclays Center, he's throwing chairs at a bus window. Like, what's he doing?
Well, you know me. I'm a criminal as well. So.
I've had to bail you out many, many times.
Many, many times.
Hopefully there won't be another Saturday night. If I'm trying to have a nice evening with my wife, am I going to get a phone call?
Be hilarious if video surfaced online of me and you bare-chested fighting in the middle of Park Slope.
Hey, to you I say,
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.